This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 18th of May, 2021. Interesting session yesterday because we saw that huge comeback over the prior two sessions, and then we saw that session wobbling. Again, some signs of correlation between U.S. equities and treasuries. We saw treasuries sort of rally a little bit more and then rolling over, and we saw similar for the NASDAQ 100 and the S&P. NASDAQ 100, I guess, a marginally weaker session, but then a very strong resurgence of risk sentiment overnight in Asia, which has really brought the action back higher overnight in the U.S. futures market. So you can see on slide two, so if we're still in this retracement mode and trying to figure out where resistance is, I think that arguably since the NASDAQ 100 was the first to roll over and did so more aggressively, that's the more interesting index technically to see if we're at some kind of cycle top or if we can recoup that. I just put in a Fibonacci of the sell-off a wave, and the retracement, next retracement in focus would be 13,625, a nice confluence of that with the 21-day moving average, at least for today. That's still some ways away, a couple hundred points, but that's where I would mark sort of the next little battleground if this rally is going to continue. And to my mind, I'm interested to see if this U.S. Treasury market is going to roll over again and see those U.S. yields coming up higher, and how and whether that tests the market. But beyond that simple rundown, Peter, what are you seeing in your sectors and themes across this market?
Yeah, well, it has basically been quite a brutal month for all our theme basket, basically, as you can see on slide three, except for a commodity sector, and then surprisingly India, which is, you know, dealing with almost a once in a generation crisis. It's, you know, the mood is really shifting on the ground against Moody, and a lot of talks in both Financial Times and Wall Street Journal and the Bloomberg News this morning that that the country is heavily underreporting casualties in the country. So, but the stock market there is holding up for now. So it has been a brutal month. But as you can see, the MSCI World is actually the third best performer. So it's really these previous very strong themes that are struggling, and the underneath this. Underneath the comm service, you have all this brutality, but also you have the value versus growth trade, which is still ongoing and probably will go on for quite some while, as you and I talked about, John, in our special podcast on Thursday, which you can listen to on your podcast app. We go through some of the technicalities, but you can see here on slide three as well with the Euro stocks 50 futures, really very close to take out the highs from six trading sessions ago. And Europe is just sitting in the sweet spot of the potential commodity super cycle and the value versus growth reorientation, and then also because it has lower valuation. So a lot of good things for Europe. And just before I pass on the baton, I wrote a little bit more a technical piece, but yesterday on analysis.saxo on U.S. equities and whether are they actually expensive was the question. And that's because the chart to the left, slide four, everyone, it's... have been posted a lot on Twitter and respectful or big newsletters, and what it shows is that, you know, we're trading at almost 22 forward earnings in S&P 500. That's typically, you know, generates low future returns. But as I show with the red line, you have a very large interval around that regression line. So it could be all the way from -2% to +5% annualized over 10 years from the current starting level. But I think you should always base equities against bonds because that's the alternative. So the picture and the richness of equities flips, I think, pretty dramatically when you shift away from an absolute valuation comparison against itself to something relative. And that's the chart to the right, where you see that the current earnings yield minus the yield you offered on the 10-year, that's in the implied equity risk premium. And as you can see here, with the current levels, it's actually quite attractive to be overweight equities versus bonds. So I just want to hammer in that point because it's not that simple.
It's not that simple. And the key moving target potentially could be that longer U.S. Treasury yield as you bring in that part of the discussion on the chart on the right. And on that subject, you know, we've seen an interesting breakout here in the German Bund, the 10-year German sovereign paper to a new high for the cycle. The U.S. is lagging so far. And as I mentioned earlier, my main point of curiosity is if this gets activated again, the 10 to 30-year U.S. yields. And you can see a chart of where we are on the yields on slide five. So we came back sort of a mini hammer-like formation yesterday as Treasury sold off again. Let's look at that. Look at that 2.5% level. You can see that was almost exactly the high back in March there for the 30-year. And then as a segue into both fixed income and commodities, a couple of interesting themes here. So I just mentioned the Bund yield going to new highs. That really clear that the sentiment levels around the euro are picking up here. We have the euro dollar poking to a new local high here above that prior little 121.80 something level this morning. And when you have the outlook for Europe picking up, the smaller currencies that are satellites to Europe generally pick up even more, whether it's the Swedish krona, sterling to some degree, although there's arguable about that relationship, but even more so the CE currencies. And we have a double whammy here for the Hungarian forint, because yesterday the central bank in Hungary, and you can see on slide six here, mentioned that it might be hiking rates as soon as next month. So finally showing some, you know, awareness of and you know, potential to react to these very high inflation numbers that were quite scary for the real yield picture out of Hungary, which had reached above 5%, the CPI in April in Hungary. So that announcement engineering a Hungarian forint rally of over 1% versus a pretty strong euro. You can see the weekly chart on the left there on slide six. And then a different story, very different story overnight. And late yesterday, we saw Chile, where we had an election at the weekend for a new constitutional assembly, basically an election that sets who will participate in an assembly to draw an entirely new constitution. And it was captured by and dominated by leftist leaning parties. So the fear there is that they will look at potentially using these big mining companies as, you know, basically as public coffers for spending, and heavy tax loads is the fear there. So even though we have these amazing highs in copper recently, you can see on the on the right there, the Chilean peso, which is long traded as a proxy for copper, has only been somewhat directionally sympathetic with the move in copper, and has actually jumped weaker here on this election result. The Chilean equity index, just for perspective, losing 9% on a day. But I'll tell you, you've got some thoughts as well about the implication of what Hungary is saying on its potential to hike rates and into the broader European sovereign picture, basically starting on slide seven there.
Yeah, John. So the news coming out from Hungary saying that the central bank might hike rates before it taper purchases under the quantitative easing program sent shockwaves in the European sovereign space. We have seen basically yields across the euro area rising, and the periphery being the one suffering the most. In slide seven, you see Italian BTP yields compared to French and German yields. And this is just a very quick chart, because the point I want to make is that despite yesterday we have seen Italian BTPs with 10 years maturity rising by 6 or 7 basis points throughout the days in the 10 years yields. Well, that rise bring them back to where they were quoting last summer. But if we look at 10 years German and French yields, they are offering a yield that is basically 2 years high. So the main take here is that it's normal that the market focus on the periphery, because obviously the ECB doesn't want financial conditions to tighten in this area. The bigger problem is where bond yields and are going, and this should be the market focus. And here, John, I want to take you to slide number eight. Basically, the fears that the ECB might come and withdraw support or taper purchases under the PEP program, of which Italy is the biggest beneficiary, is based on the fact that the ECB would do so because even though nominal yields are rising, and in these slides, slide number eight, we have nominal bond yields versus in blue real bond yields. While nominal yields are rising, real yields are flat. But the point that I want to make here is that real yields might be flat in Germany, but in Italy, for example, they are rising, and in the periphery, they're rising as well. So this is the reason why I don't believe that in June, the ECB will take a step such as tapering purchases under the PEP program.
They certainly have a hard time doing so if the euro is banging at the top of the cycle against the dollar as well. Okay, so Ola, we just brought in that Chilean story, and has to be, of course, Chile is the world's biggest producer, has to be playing some role here in the copper price comeback. And then take us through gold, where I think it's quite interesting to see, obviously, this big action and extension above the 200-day moving average.
That's right, John. As you said, with the election in Chile, the market has been worried about this for a while, and now obviously we have the result. And adding to this, you can also see on slide 11, there's also another headline, but basically there's an upcoming presidential election in Peru, and the left is leading candidate. He wants to copy the tax proposals from Chile, and basically what it could mean is that there could be a progressive tax rate being introduced depending on the price of copper, going as high as 75%, and that obviously could curtail the miners' ability to increase production. And obviously increased production is what the market needs over the next 5 to 10 years, and that's why we already rallied by 100% since the low last year, basically because we got the prospect for rising green transformation demand towards the EV rollout, and at the same time we got supply which is very inelastic, and that supply obviously is could become an even a greater focus over the coming months and years. So we'll watch closely what's happening in Chile, but as you can see on the chart, we found support after just retracing back to the 2011 record around the 465 level. We're now bouncing high again, just sitting 2.5% below the recent record high. So not much in terms of correction in copper at this moment in time. And as you talked about gold and silver, they claimed both claiming another scalp yesterday. We took out the trend line from in gold from the August high. And with that, having done that, we're now focusing on the 1875 this morning. That's the 50% retracement. A break of that could clear the path up towards that 1922 level, again, using Fibonacci levels. Silver, once again, yesterday, as we've seen in recent past, was doing the most of the heavy lifting. Silver raced higher. We are now, once again, getting close to that 30 level. And this time around, it's a much more on a much more solid foundation than the spike we had back in February. So silver is also one to watch. But again, after such a big three-day rally, just look out for potentially a little bit of consolidation here, 28.30 to 28 even. That's the area of support that needs to hold down.
Yeah, and then in FX, the key driver here for the U.S. dollar, that high CPI print combined with not much of a reaction in the Treasury market puts U.S. real yields lower. That's obviously a driver of gold, but it's also a driver of the weaker dollar. And you can see the overview on slide 9, their latest FX board and the trend readings there. The dollar taking the bottom category now at minus, or getting close to doing so. The yen is still marginally weaker, although if you look at the local daily action, the yen is actually firming up slightly against the U.S. dollar. Gold, the strongest reading there. And on the left, you can see that sterling notching a new high here. And actually, it's trading above the highest daily close this morning, short of 142. And there was a nominal high above that on that spike back in March or into February, whenever that was. And a pretty strong formation there. And we're seeing some confirmation elsewhere as well with the Eurodollar branching higher. The key question being, and I'll come back to you on this. I mean, you know, U.S. Treasuries have been quite sidelined and sideways. We've talked a little bit, especially with Stein Jakobsen in our special podcast on Friday, about some of the factors that may be holding Treasuries up. There could be some foreign buying interest as well, although you've pointed out in the indirect bidding, that's a little bit weak. But especially as this one-off issue with the Treasury undermining its general account winds down into August 1st, something's got to give here, doesn't it, in the U.S. Treasury market, if yields are rising in general elsewhere too?
Absolutely. And I think that the the what we are seeing now in the US treasuries is in market is that we are in a consolidation area, but they remain pretty weak. And we could see that in bidding metrics last week in the 10 and 30 years US treasury auction. The 10 years received high demand, but we have to remind that the 10 years serves also as a safe haven. It's the main US benchmark. In the 30 years, we have seen weaker bidding metrics, especially in foreign demand. And the main reason for that is that investors are now afraid to take on duration. So in slide 10, you see the yields on 10 years US treasuries. And what you can see is that the levels I'm watching closely is the 1.5, which is a very strong support line, and 1.75, which is the resistance level that they find hard to break. But any element out there related to a surprise of inflation, weak bidding metrics, can push yields above these 1.75% resistance level and have yields going fast to try 2%. And this week, one of the events that they can trigger these sell-off in US treasuries pushing yields higher is the CPI readings of the Eurozone tomorrow. They are expected to come out at 1.6%, which is well below the ECB target rate. But if there is a surprise there, then we can definitely see European sovereigns selling off and this weakness leaking also in US treasuries. And after the CPI readings, we have the FOMC meetings coming out, minutes coming out, and the 20 years auction.
All right, we'll be looking out for that for sure. I'm really using that U.S. fixed income as just such an important indicator, and it's just not doing anything when there's a lot of other stuff going on, and that'll be so critical, I think, for how this market shapes up. Also, maybe not so critical and not so much in focus, but there's still an awful lot going on, Peter, on the earnings front. Take us through the latest here.
Yeah, we should probably talk a little bit about what's going on the acquisition front. We should have mentioned that yesterday, so we'll do that today. But just very quickly, so we mentioned that the Meituan, Xiaomi, and Tencent would report. That's also what you can see on slide 13. They did report. They all seem to have postponed their earnings release date. So the earnings calendar we used were not fully up to date by yesterday. But Tencent Music actually reported, and they beat expectations yesterday, but then they also said that they were in heavy discussions or talks with the Chinese regulators. And I've put in this piece on, as you can see on slide 13, a small snippet from a headline from the South China Morning Post, talking 4 days about that Tencent has an outsized share in the online music streaming market in China. And this is just further evidence. Also, the Meituan, you know, talked about it on the podcast, had this old poem that he was posting on social media, and you know, investors have then, you know, moved away from Meituan because everyone in China is right now is just afraid of the government's crackdown on technology and market power. And you can see Tencent Music Entertainment, TME, is the ticker trading on the New York Stock Exchange. You can see the small insert there on the stock price. I mean, if we're down 50% from the recent peak just a couple of months ago. So this is also the reason why the emerging market equities have been doing so badly. They started very strongly this year, you know, racing out of the gates, but it's really falling down since. But that is what it is, and we'll still track what's going on in China. And they, you know, the Meituan and Xiaomi and Tencent will report next week. Today's focus points are, for my part, is definitely Walmart and Home Depot on the inflation angle there. I'm very curious to see what those two major retailers are saying. Then we have C, which is part of our bubble basket. Also sits in our gaming basket, theme basket. It's really a fast-growing Southeast Asia e-commerce and gaming company. And then you have NetEase and Baidu, which are two Chinese names. Those two earnings releases are confirmed, so they will report today. And then I should close off, John, by saying that there's And maybe I'll write something for analysis that sex on this, because it's the whole video streaming industry is heating up. So Netflix is still the giant. Disney is catching up, and Amazon is also trying to catch up. And they are apparently this morning and has announced that they are in talks to buy MGM, you know, the company behind the franchise of James Bond. And then yesterday we had AT&T and Discovery making a huge, also doing talks of potentially creating a huge new video streaming service to go against Netflix. And Netflix share price have done nothing this year. It's flat for the year, maybe down a little bit if I remember correctly. So this is something that will really be of interest to follow in the next 6 months, how all these new competitors will impact Netflix business.
And whether the pandemic plague populaces of the world have any more content that they want to look at as well, I suppose.
Good point.
There's a lot of content out there. Macro calendar. And one thing I should have brought in, because I think it's quite interesting, tomorrow morning at 6 GMT, we have the UK April CPI. And you know, one of the arguments in favor of why you see cable, you know, pushing up towards those cycle highs and at 142, as I'm speaking here, is that April CPI release expected to show headline inflation of 1.6% and the core at 1.3%. Contrast that with the April readings from the US, where you're seeing these crazy 4+% on the headline, et cetera. So that relative real yield picture looking just so much worse for the US if that's expected to continue. Part of that, of course, is that the fact that sterling has rebounded very smartly since the pandemic lows, and the US dollar has done the opposite. So their billing in international currency terms for imports is lower. But a theme that bears watching for sure, as well as to me the most important market, and that is US Treasuries, as equity markets are trying to fly high again here, and at least overnight in the US futures market once again. But for today specifically, look out for the housing starts and building permits numbers from the US, whether those continue to cool, as we've seen mortgage rates likely, very much likely, bottoming for the cycle and starting to slowly come back higher. A couple of central bank speakers, not really much worth mentioning. And then finally, on the Australian Q1 wage index, we had the RBA minutes out overnight. RBA just really determined to sit on their hands. They want to see the wages coming up higher to prove the point that inflation is getting towards their target zone, because the expectation here is only for a wage increase of 1.4% year on year. That's not the stuff that the right kind of inflation for hiking rates is made of. So I think it's an interesting, that one, it was interesting to watch for upside surprises, as well as any data from the Australian employment report on Thursday indicating a significant resurgence and comeback in full-time positions. That's a long one for today. We'll wrap it up there. And of course, we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.